What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 280 on this Thursday, June 25th, 2026. Josh Calloway, Colin Kennedy with you on a Thursday. I'm back on the home base. I'm back from Omaha. Oklahoma won the national title. Unbelievable run. I had the one-man instant reaction show really late Monday night from Charles Schwab Field. We'll pull it apart a little bit more, though, and kind of go big picture. They had a celebration last night. Colin and I, kind of where does this run rank in OU history? We'll kind of big picture it. I'll look ahead to next year a little bit as well as we kind of put a bow on just an unbelievable baseball season and obviously a run to a national championship. And then, of course, Thursday as we talk recruiting, I've got Colin here. We have a few key recruiting updates. Some recruitments are winding down. A decision going to be made tomorrow with a key target. We'll talk about the latest with a few key names on the back end on the recruiting side of things as well. So it's a very nice baseball football Thursday show. A reminder before we get started, you can subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Use the promo code SoonersPod60. That'll get you 60% off a VIP membership to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 24/7 Sports Network for an entire year. Take advantage of it. Be with us every single day. We're heading to the summer, recruiting stuff constantly. Obviously, media days are coming up. Fall camp is sneaky soon, by the way. Sneaky soon. It's not that far away. So be with us. Get in there now. Take advantage and hang out with Colin, myself, Brody Lusk, Tom Green every single day as Sooners Illustrated. All right, CK. Let's get into it, good sir. I mentioned it. I'm back. I drove back up Tuesday after a late night on Monday. Oklahoma won the national title. They won the College World Series, first title in 32 years, the most unbelievable, improbable, just out of nowhere run, maybe ever. We can kind of big picture it as best we can. Also, Colin, you know, this is a program that I think is near and dear to both of us. We both covered it back when we were in school. For me, it was really the first thing I covered, period, you know, was getting to get into OU baseball. That was right at the end of the Pete Hughes tenure, and then getting right into, obviously, the start of the Skip Johnson era. And you and I can both appreciate just how unbelievable this is. And so just big picture, I mean, Colin, obviously your thoughts watching this all unfold and just how remarkable it was. And obviously I'll give some mine as well, but just unbelievable run for Skip and that program to win the national championship. And it's been a few days now, and I still find myself when I have like an open moment, my brain just being like, man, they won the national championship on Monday. It's unbelievable and one of the all-time greatest runs in the history of Oklahoma sports.
Yeah, man. I let me start here with a couple of things. First and foremost, want to certainly congratulate the Oklahoma baseball program and everyone involved, as Josh can certainly attest, as one of the best covering the program on a day-to-day basis. A lot of great people, a lot of individuals who deserve this type of moment, and a really special team. And a group that was easy to root for, right? And I don't know. I think it's really cool. I mean, in the immediate aftermath of the championship to even yesterday, the amount of fans of other fan bases and programs that have reached out to me, and I'm sure you, so many people across college baseball have talked about how they really enjoyed watching this Oklahoma baseball team put it together in this fashion and go on this run and win a national championship. And when you have that type of support, even outside your little bubble, I think, again, it speaks to the way that OU baseball and this program is thought of and the way that Skip Johnson is viewed as a key figure across the sport. And so congratulations to him. Congratulations to these players, the people behind the scenes who make it possible. Again, a group that was really easy to root for from afar, and just a really fun watch in the end. And the second thing that I wanted to lead off with is congratulating my guy, Josh Calloway here. Josh mentioned it. You know, we both started covering OU baseball in our early in our tenure. The two of us covered the program.
Yeah.
Students.
I'm sure. Cold.
Yeah, man. Stood in some of those dugouts at Tuesday Wichita State games when it's, you know, 40 degrees and windy. And I, you know, some people will remember that I covered Oklahoma baseball for a couple of years for us here at 24/7 Sports and OU Insider back when I graduated. So I understand the day-to-day grind of covering baseball at this level and for this website. And As someone who has done that in the past, I can certainly appreciate what Josh here did. You know, Josh covers football, basketball, baseball. He dabbles in the recruiting and the softball. Like, this guy's a nonstop grind, a brand new father, a married man. And to watch this OU baseball program and to watch Josh, who does it better than anybody, cover this team on this magical run, a major tip to you. And that's why I defer to you on this judgment, because I've had a hard time answering this question. I was on a phone call with a friend of mine who is a big Texas fan, like a diehard Texas fan. And he admitted to me on the phone, he's like, dude, I'm a closet OU baseball fan, even though I'm a Texas guy, because Skip Johnson and
yeah,
you know, so many people in the Texas fan base and other programs were pulling for Oklahoma. And this individual asked me the same question: where does this run rank in Oklahoma athletics history? And the best that I can come up with right now is the football championship run in 2000 is the most recent edition of something this improbable, right? Sure. Bob Stoops in his first year has an okay season in 99, and then in entering the 2000 run, I mean, that was a second year head coach, a program that with Josh Heupel at the helm at quarterback, you know, I think it was Mike Stoops who told the story of, like, he wasn't even sure that Oklahoma should be recruiting Heupel at quarterback. That was their arm. And I believe, what was it, a 7-5 finish for them in 99. And then they go undefeated,
right,
and go win a national championship with a second year head coach and a program that was escaping the dark cloud that was the 90s, right, for this team. And I this was a point that was brought up to me that I think is very strong. I think people forget kind of the dark days of OU football before, sure, they made that run, and that adds the context as well. So that to me is kind of a recent addition, especially when you consider the grind that is football. But even then, man, it's hard to make an argument to rival this run.
I agree. First off, they appreciate the kind words. I'm very fortunate to cover the team and the program. I mentioned it real briefly, the instant reaction on Monday that I did myself at Charles Schwab Field. You know, so many good people. I'm fortunate it's myself and a great friend of the program, Eddie Radosovich, a Sooner Scoop. We're kind of the only two guys that really cover the team,
yeah,
wire to wire all season. And so the benefit of that is that we really get to know the team really well. And Skip and the staff and all the people, Patrick Dunn, the SID, and all the support staff, we really get to know them all. And they're all awesome people. It's truly a special program. So I really, it was just great being along for the ride and being there in Lawrence and being there in Omaha. Really cool to be around them. And so you're just happy for all those people, because I see firsthand, A, that they're good people, and then B, how much effort they put into it. And it's just, it's really, really cool. As for the question at hand, I am with you in terms of I've had a hard time answering it because it's been asked, right? Where does this stack up? Is this the greatest run in OU history? And I've had a hard time answering it as well, which kind of pushes me toward thinking it is, right? Because I have a hard time mustering one that is clearly better. I think 2000 football is definitely the one that's the biggest rival to it. But, and like you said, the 90s as a backdrop, Bob Stoops in his second year, they were ranked in the preseason, not that they were considered a title, you know, contender necessarily, but they were ranked in the preseason. And it's just, you know, Oklahoma's a blue blood in football, so it's never going to feel like as insane as this. And they have a lot more baseball history than they're given credit for. This national, yes, title was their third. Only 10 programs have won 3 titles, and OU is now one of them. So it's not like there's some, you know, happy-go-lucky Cinderella story in that regard, right? It's a good program with lots of guys in the pros, and they've been good for a while. You know, they were a runner-up 4 years ago, right? So it's not completely just, like, shocking. But when you combine not ranked in the preseason, you combine the way they finished the year, you know, 4-9 in their last 13 games, and then you combine who they beat, because you're never going to find, in my mind, really maybe in any sport, even beyond OU, just pick, you know, period, a more murder's row of teams that OU beat to do this. And the way they did it, these were emphatic wins. There was nothing fluky about any of this. They were dominant in the tournament. To beat Georgia Tech twice in Atlanta on the road, historically great offense, that's your ACC champ. They go to Lawrence, Big 12 champ, dominate that Super Regional, blew them out twice in Omaha, dominate a top 10 Alabama team, beat Georgia twice, one of which was a blowout. That's the SEC champ. They were by far the big betting favorite to win the whole thing going into the College World Series, and then to take on a top five North Carolina team and to beat them. It's like, and to do it the way they did, 13-2 on Monday night in the championship game, same score as the national championship in football in 2000. It's just the teams they beat, the way they did it, the fact they were unranked in the preseason. It was noted last night, the celebration thing, which was an awesome event, by the way, which you can watch on the YouTube channel. The whole thing is up there. Nobody was picked on all SEC team, not one player. Nobody was on the all freshman team. This OU team was, you know, a lot of champions like to do the "we were doubted, nobody believed in us" thing, whether it's really true or not. You see, like Kirby Smart like to do that, and it's like, you're Georgia, like, you know, get at. That's really actually true for this team. They were picked against them literally every step of the way, even going into the finals. Trey Gamble talked about it yesterday. Like, even after everything they did going into the finals, North Carolina was the betting favorite, and they got the majority of the picks for North Carolina. And so when you combine all of that together, it's kind of hard not to feel like this isn't the greatest run in OU sports history. Because, look, the reality is they haven't won a title in basketball, right? They haven't won a national title. And then in softball – OU softball is a juggernaut, that you're never going to have this level of improbability and the doubters just because of where that program is, right? I mean, they've won so many titles and they are the gold standard in softball. So it's going to be hard to even be able to replicate this. And so just all those factors combined, it's, I feel like it's got to be really high. If it's not number one, it's got to be really high.
Well, and I'll present a couple other arguments. I'm sure we could keep going down this rabbit hole, but sure. These were a couple of other things that I was discussing with a friend of mine. To further this argument, right, number one, I do personally believe that college baseball is the most difficult sport to have success in the major sport fields.
Because to sustain it, yeah, to continue.
Because, I mean, look at LSU and look at, I mean, South Carolina, which,
yeah,
I mean, some programs that as a – you know, watcher of college baseball, as someone who, I mean, Josh and I went to Omaha on multiple occasions just to go watch baseball. Yeah. As people who follow it, there are big name programs in the sport of college baseball that struggle to maintain their expectation level because of how hard it is to do in this game. I mean, Skip Johnson talked about it all the time. The sport kind of, its whole goal is to make you defeated and challenge your mental fortitude and your effectiveness. And that takes a toll even on some of the best. And so for Oklahoma to find this level of success in arguably the most difficult sport to do so like that, I mean, it's even more improbable when you consider the sport that it is. And then number two, this is a big thing that I was hammering home with a friend of mine the other day. The fact that they did this with three freshmen on the bump.
Never been done. To have only freshmen start in Omaha and win the whole thing. It's literally never been done. And that's what they did.
That, I still don't know we're wrapping our head around the absurdity of that specific layer to this.
Yeah.
In what world in this sport of baseball are freshmen pitchers, by the way, supposed to be that effective in a championship run against
historic elite? Yeah.
Historic offenses. I mean, are we giving that group enough flowers? Which is saying something because it, you know, we kept talking about it. Wow. Like, look at these freshmen go.
Right.
Have we really put into perspective what they accomplished on this run? I mean, you said it. It wasn't just freshmen going out there and throw. They were going up against elite offenses in the sport of college baseball, which, again, I think adds to the argument that this is one of the best in the history of athletics program.
And this five-year run as well, I'd be hard-pressed. I'd have to go crunch some numbers. This is anecdotal. I haven't done any research on this. I would be hard-pressed to find a better five-year run in the history of the program. When you combine from the 22 run to now, you're talking about being a runner-up. You're talking about winning the Big 12 in 2024 and hosting a regional that year. They've been to the regional finals four times. Now they have a national title, obviously two Omaha trips in there. This five-year stretch, they've been really good for a while. And the program gets overlooked. It has for a long time because it's at the same time as softball, which is such a behemoth. And won four straight national titles just a couple of years ago. Like that, I get all that. It gets overlooked, but they've been good. And it just came together this time. It all pieced together. And I kind of asked about that yesterday, a little bit of like, does, you know, that 22 run, because the championship logo that they designed and they announced, it has 22 seams on the baseball to honor the 22 team, because that outlined the foundation for all this to start. And I kind of asked him about that, and he acknowledged like that 22 team set the run for this in a way, but like they were good before that. Like the 2020 team, you know, who knows what would have happened if they got to see that through with the level of pitching they had on that team. The 2018 team with Kyler Murray and Steel Walker, remember they were hurt going into the tournament that year. That was a really good team that Skip talked about that he felt was Omaha worthy, and they didn't get to see it through because they were just so beat up and hurt at the end of the year that year going into the tournament. Like, they've been good for a while, and Skip has built this thing to be consistently quite good, and it's unbelievable. And the celebration last night, which I touched on earlier, I've never seen the stadium like that. It was absolutely jammed. It was so packed. It was by far the most people I've ever seen in there. We need that in an actual game. First off, I think the players kind of joked about that too. Like, can we get this? We need, this was awesome. I appreciate it. Can we get this in March and February and certainly next April and May? Cause that, it was unbelievable. But the crowd turnout last night and just the way that the fan base has grown. I mean, the finals in 22 against Ole Miss, that was basically just Oxford and Omaha. This time there were so many OU fans up there. It was unbelievable. And then you look at what it was like, Colin, the line to get in when I pulled up, it was down. It was near the 7-Eleven down there on the corner. Like literally, it was crazy how many people were out there for that last night. And just the way the program has grown and the way the fan base has grown, it's just really cool. Just really, really cool. Yeah. And it's a credit to Skip and the staff and the players. And the way that they hung in there at the end of this season when they were kind of left for dead by just about everyone to do what they did, it's hard to really appreciate it. I think this run and this title is going to stand the test of time, and that I think it's only going to get more impressive as we get further away from it. You know what I mean? Like in 10 years, we'll be like, man, that was crazy. You know, we'll look back. And so just unbelievable run that they should be really, really proud of for a very long time.
And I want to talk about the impact that this run has and will have on the direction of the program moving forward. I want to have that discussion here in a second, but
sure.
You, like you mentioned, they hung in there, and to again further the context of this run, I was talking about with some friends. I mean, to have a former walk-on in Desaun Harris, what he accomplished at the plate and in the outfield, the way that this offense woke up and reached an entirely new level of effectiveness with guys like LeChance. And so, I mean, Taki, what he accomplished as well. As some of the discussions I've had, I wanted to tee it up to you, looking back on this year as a whole, what are some moments in this season, regular season, postseason, whether it's specific individual performances, series or games, or maybe even like coaching decisions that were made that altered the direction of this team? As someone who covered it on a day-to-day basis, you know, you and Eddie, what would you look back on and say, like, man, I thought that or that was really important in the build-up to winning the national title?
Yeah, well, it's such an unusual year in that they really, you know, so they got off to a great start, right? I mean, they went down to Arlington to start the season and dominated down there at the Shriners. They won it, and they went from unranked to all the way up into the top 10 fairly quickly. I mean, by the middle of the season, you know, whenever we're kind of doing spring ball for football, by that time, it was kind of feeling like this team could be a national seed. Like that was how good it felt at the time. But then they got into the grind of SEC play, and the starting pitching started to kind of wane. You know, Cam Johnson went through his struggles. LJ Mercurius went through his struggles, which is, he's an incredible story in of itself, and that, you know, highly touted portal guy, gets off to a great start. They move him into the bullpen somewhat in favor of his younger brother, which is, that's a tough thing. And he ended up being their best bullpen guy and he was unreal on Monday night. He completely shut North Carolina down, gave them no hope, no life at all in that game on Monday. He was unbelievable. But so, and it just sort of slipped toward the back end of the year where it's like, it just, they kept plugging holes. It was like, they just can never quite piece it all together. Whenever they would score, they'd give up a bunch. Whenever they'd get a good pitching, they couldn't score enough. It was like just one thing after another. Just felt they were kind of snake bitten. Like it just couldn't quite piece it together. And even though it always felt like they were better than what they were doing. But then right at the end of the year, you know, those last couple of series, even though they lost them, they started to hit. They started to score more runs. They started to hit for more power. Because that's the big thing. They weren't hitting for power at all the first half of the year. Then all of a sudden, they started to put the ball over the fence and into the seats. And, you know, that Tennessee series, Skip Johnson and Reggie Willits, they decided to go back to their kind of regular starting lineup, if you will, like opening day lineup, which included putting Dayton Tocchi back in there. It included having Jason Walk lead off again, letting Dayton LaChance catch. They liked having Brock in left field. They made just a couple of changes. They kept the Son Harrison right. And that's really when they started to take off. And the lineup did not change once throughout the entire postseason. They had to tweak around a little bit with, you know, DH and who what spot in the field, but it was the same nine throughout the entire postseason run. And the offense was just unbelievable. They started to hit the ball all over the place and they just found a groove at the right time. And then obviously Skip, the decision, which was an extremely bold one, to go with this all freshman rotation in the tournament. Also, that's the thing is, like, in the past and really every year I've covered the team, and I've said this before, like, it usually takes until like April ish to kind of find like the rotation. You kind of play around with it. You move some guys around, you see how it looks. This year, they had the same rotation all season. It was Cam Johnson, LJ Mercurius, and Corey Rager all year. It never changed outside of some injuries and stuff that forced guys to miss like a weekend here or there. But that was the three guys all year. But then when you got into the tournament, that's when Skip flipped it and decided to go with these freshmen instead, which is a crazy bold move, obviously. And it could not have worked any better. Like it was amazing. And so those decisions, which were, you know, can be looked at. I mean, you're going to take a lot of heat if they don't work, right? Were tremendous. And they worked obviously masterfully. And I mean, Nick Weslowski had three starts this season. They were all in the tournament. Two of them were in Omaha. Those were his three starts of the entire season. And he was excellent. And he started the game on Monday night where they won the national championship. So it's unbelievable. And just the way that the guys and the players were able to stick with it when it would have been so easy to just kind of roll over and die a little bit with the way the season ended. That's the thing that's going to stand out above all else. So just an all-time story. And I think it's a lesson for all future teams of like, man, hang in there. Just hang in there and keep playing and get into the tournament. And you never know what can happen because they went into the postseason as cold as can be, really, and managed to do what they did. Pretty unbelievable. I think you're muted.
My fault. Yeah. This is something I was thinking about as well, like to exactly your point. I think that the last few months in general at Oklahoma, I think exactly, you know, epitomized that of like, hang in there. I mean, OU baseball stays firm and doesn't fold and goes on this run. I mean, the Red November run for Oklahoma football of like when they met and said, hey man, like enough's enough. What kind of team do you want to be?
I was thinking like this June is like, this is the craziest month I've had covering a team since when? I was like, well, probably November. Like the last November and this June for football and baseball, two of the craziest months you'll ever have as an OU fan. We've been blessed for us here at Sooners Illustrated and OU fans the last 6-7 months because we've had some fun.
Walking off the field in Tuscaloosa after that, I mean, that added to the streak that they were on. I remember walking off that field thinking like, I don't know when I'll ever get to experience something like this in my career or my life. And Oklahoma baseball was just like, just watch this, dude.
Yeah, we got it. Yeah.
Turning the page forward a little bit, kind of transitioning here, this is the next big question. I know for a fact that on top of covering the team, you are part of the greater fabric of the diehard day-to-day following of Oklahoma baseball. And I have been asked repeatedly by other fan bases, what does this championship run now mean for the future of Oklahoma baseball? A lot of people out there are curious, what is this going to do for Skip Johnson's program? What does this mean for Oklahoma baseball as a whole? Moving forward into the future, like what type of support or what type of outlook could this spring going on this improbable run? I tee it up to you, man. What type of true tangible impact can winning the national championship in 2026 do for OU baseball in 2027 and beyond?
Well, it's going to do a lot, obviously, right? I mean, the 22 run, that was really what kind of kickstarted this whole thing in terms of the reinvestment in the program. And that's when, you know, the Kimry family, which, you know, I've gotten to know Brian Kimry a little bit throughout this run the last couple of weeks, a few weeks or so. Couldn't be a nicer guy. And the relationship that they have, that family with Skip and the program, it really started to blossom. And obviously there's a reason their name is on the stadium because of what they've done for the program and how much they've given to the program. And there's more coming. And outside of just them, right? I mean, you talk about the way that the fans embrace the program and the way that the money started to come in and the investment started to come in after that run, it's only grown. And it's obviously going to have a huge jump after a national championship like this. And look, they're already in the early stages of this renovations that were already happening before this run, right? I mean, this year there were some small ones, new bullpens, some stuff like that. Next year there's going to be more renovations added. By 2028, there's going to be a bunch more seating and new facilities for the team and new locker rooms and new building. And like, there's a bunch of stuff that's already happening. That's already on the docket even before all this. And so you add in that and what they're getting from a player standpoint, NIL, that sort of thing. You look at this portal class already as evidence of it. They have a top 10 portal class right now, and that's no accident with what they've done and the investment. There is a belief, and I don't know the exact numbers, and I'm hesitant to, you know, do that sort of thing, but from my understanding, they're going to be in the middle to top third-ish in the SEC in NIL spending on their roster next year, which obviously the SEC, if you go look at like the top 20 teams in NIL spending in baseball, basically it's the entire SEC is in there, right? I mean, it's by far the most competitive and highly invested baseball conference. And so being in the top end of the SEC means you're in the top end of the sport. And I do believe that that's where Oklahoma is trending. And Roger Denny, man, you know, and I don't mean it to suggest that Joe Castiglione was different, because it's like every time you comment Roger, it makes it seem like you're almost slight, you know, slanting against Joe C. But Roger Denny's been very open about, like, he was at all the games in Omaha. He was there every single game, and he was very open about, like, we care about baseball and we are going to put more effort behind baseball. Like, we want this to be a regular thing, being here in Omaha and doing this. And so I think the program is really well positioned. And obviously when you look at what the graph on the screen says, as far as like next season in particular, there's a lot to be excited about. They're going to have their entire rotation back. They're all freshmen, so they're all going to be back. Cord Rager, Xander Mercurius, Nick Weslowski are going to be back. And look, who knows what happens? Maybe by the time next year rolls around, some other freshman who's coming in is amazing, or one of the portal guys they get or something, and this isn't the weekend rotation like we all assume it will be right now. But obviously right now that feels like you can pencil it in as the rotation next year. And look, they're going to have to replace basically their entire lineup. A lot of these guys are going to move on. You had a bunch of seniors and a bunch of draft eligible guys like Jackson Willits, who's going to move on. I'm assuming that your Camden Johnsons, your Brendan Brocks, your Jason Walks, those guys all technically could be back, but I'm assuming they will not be. Dayton LeChance, same boat, like, could be back, but I'm not expecting it by any means. They're all draft eligible. They all were awesome. It's usually the way that goes. You go ahead and take it, you jump, right? But you're going to replace the lineup. But like I mentioned a second ago, they have a top 10 portal class. They've already made some big additions that I think are definitely going to start for them next year, like a Carson Brumbaugh from Arkansas and a Jay Abernathy from Tennessee. These are starters. These are guys who are going to come in and play right away that they've gotten through the portal. And look, the reality is what they've added to lower level, the JUCO guys, when they go get someone from Arkansas or Tennessee, those are big, flashy, easy, obvious gets to get excited about. But they've shown every year that they will find these JUCO guys like Dayton LeChance, like Brendan Brock, guys that are not going to blow you away. They're not going to shock because of where they're coming from, but that'll happen again. There will be guys like that who kind of pop up semi out of nowhere, if you will, and that are big contributors next year. Now, it got harder. They are going to lose Todd Butler. He moves on to Florida, which is just inevitable. That's what I said to our VIP members last night. Like, you win a national championship, it's incredibly inevitable that other programs are going to poach your coaches, right, for a higher standing within the coaching staff, you know, salary, that sort of thing. And Todd Butler, was the recruiting director for Oklahoma, one of the best dudes, really nice guy to talk to, and he is awesome. It's a loss. I'm not going to pretend like it's not a loss. That'd be silly to say otherwise, but you have to feel confident that Skip will find someone to replace him. And again, when you win a national title, it's going to happen, right? I mean, programs are going to take your coaches. That's true of every sport. How many times did Nick Saban in Alabama have to replace his coordinators? It was like every year, right? I mean, it's going to happen. It's just you're not going to keep everyone. So it's not going to be a given that they're going to come right back and be this again, because you're going to have to replace a lot. But there certainly is a foundation with the pitching and with Skip at the helm and what they've already done in the portal to feel like they're going to be really good again next year and certainly have a chance to, you know, who knows, maybe make another run at it in 2027. But a lot to be excited with. The way the program is moving, the renovations coming, the investment, the fan interest, it's all as high and as good and as positive as certainly as it's been any time that I've been around the program. I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So,
and if you're interested out there listening and you do want to be part of the newfound support for Oklahoma baseball, there are a few links out there where you can directly contribute to the Kimry Family Stadium renovations and also the Oklahoma Baseball Club, which will in turn support the day-to-day operations of the program to the players and things of that nature. One Oklahoma supports the NIL contributions, things like that. So if you're out there and wondering how you can help, those resources are out there and available.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm planning for our VIP members. I kind of touched on a little bit there, but tomorrow to have a little bit of like a roster reset for 27, kind of some guys that I think are draft eligible who will go, guys who maybe might be back, what they do have coming back. We'll kind of do a little bit of that for our VIP members tomorrow. So subscribe and be able to get with that. And we'll keep the coverage going throughout the summer. They've already had a great portal class, which we've been reporting on, and more to come, obviously, as they move into the summer. So great stuff. All-time run. It was an absolute blast to cover it. I was in Omaha for, I think, 12 days. Good to be back home. The celebration last night was incredible. To see Skip get like legitimately choked up speaking was unreal. Just really cool. Really cool. Really cool thing for everyone, and an all-time run, an all-time team for sure. So with that closed the book on the season, the athletic year. When I left Norman last night, I left the stadium. I was trying to think, what's this one? I go to Norman, probably not until fall camp, which is kind of crazy because I go so often.
Yeah.
The Sooners Illustrated podcast will be back after this short break. That being said, we're turning the page. 72 days until kickoff for OU football. Fall camp will be right around the corner. Media days are coming up in just a few weeks. Got Colin here. Do have a few recruiting things we wanted to hit before we got out of here on the show today. And obviously next week we'll really kind of fully jump into like all season football content. We really haven't had to do it yet. Baseball was a nice distraction for 3-4 weeks. Really kept us occupied with plenty to talk about and plenty to do. But we certainly have some – we got to start getting ready for the season, which we'll start to do really next week. But I have a few recruiting things, Colin, I want to throw at you before we get out of here today. Let's start with the obvious in that Bodie Sparrow is announcing his commitment tomorrow. He's doing it with us at CBS College Football, I think, is where he's going to do it on the YouTube, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the time in front of me. I should have looked at it. Do you have the time? I think it's like
in
the afternoon.
I believe it's 2 p.m. Central.
2 p.m. Central. We'll double-check that. CK, where do things stand? I mean, this is a guy that we've been talking about for a while, the Utah product. You know, he's listed as an athlete. That's what I have on the graphic because that's how his recruiting profile reads. Oklahoma wants him as a safety. Where are things in your mind roughly as we record this about 24 hours-ish out from him making a decision? How are you feeling going into Friday? Obviously, a big one that Oklahoma's been after for a while here, Mr. Sparrow.
Yeah, so I can confirm that on the CBS Sports College Football YouTube channel, Bodie Sparrow will announce with us at 247sports.com his college commitment, and that will be at 3 p.m. Eastern, so 2 p.m. Central.
Gotcha.
And he will choose between Oklahoma, Oregon, Utah, and BYU. That being said, of the four finalists, I personally believe this is essentially down to two. I think this is between OU and BYU. He took that Oklahoma official visit very early, if you'll remember, one of his first on the slate. And that trip went extremely well. if I remember correctly, in exact order, it went Oklahoma, Oregon, Utah, BYU. And on that very first trip for Bodie Sparrow, going in and then pretty much coming out of it, the buzz was, hey, man, this might happen for Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And OU has essentially been seen as the quote-unquote leader now for months, and that was established before his trip to Norman. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think Bodie Sparrow was very close to making his commitment to Oklahoma that weekend. I think that both he and a guy that we're getting ready to talk about here in a second, in Uila Wolfgram, I think both of those guys on that OV weekend, with everything that was going on, were about this amount away. You know, sure. If you listen on pod, I've got my fingers very close together
sure.
to making that call, but he didn't. And that's tough because I was thinking about this the other day. I don't know that we're talking enough about the fact that Oklahoma got Bodie Sparrow and Uila Wolfgram for one of their first OV weekends. And then while everything was going well, as time has passed by since that early trip, things seemingly slip further and further into uncertainty for Oklahoma with two of these priority targets. So with Bodie Sparrow going into his decision, again, he'll announce on our YouTube channel at CBS Sports College Football, SoonersIllustrated.com, 247Sports.com. We're going to have, you know, a bunch of stuff ready to go whenever the time comes. To my knowledge, at time of recording, he has not notified anyone of his decision yet. So, latest that I've checked, I have heard that he has not let Oklahoma or BYU know his intentions. Hmm. And obviously, you know, with him getting ready to reveal with us, he has informed us at 247 Sports, hey, I'm still thinking through things before I make that final call. With that said, this is really tricky to handicap because, of course, anything can change with this still being uncertain. There is a lot of BYU buzz behind the scenes. There's a lot of BYU buzz. And obviously, in the post-visit aftermath of this, that's going to happen. I think Oklahoma is still very optimistic and hopeful. I think that OU is waiting for that call to come through from Bodie Sparrow, letting them know whether or not he's headed to Norman or he's headed to Provo. But what I keep coming back to is BYU has a lot of very clear emotional connections to Sparrow, right? You know, in-state option. He obviously knows a lot of people at BYU. Mm-hmm. BYU will employ him and use him basically however he would like to, right? I honestly, I can't necessarily rule out some usage on both sides of the ball. We'll see. But BYU, I mean, it makes a ton of sense because of the personal connections and the closeness and things of that nature. On the flip side, I think that Oklahoma has been seen as the leader for the longest time because it has been able to establish the personal connections even out in Norman, Oklahoma, with a prospect from the Beehive State. But at the same time, Oklahoma's plan, I think, is as good as anybody's in this recruitment. OU is one of the very first, with Bodie Sparrow, to essentially say, nope, we see you strictly as a safety, and here's why. And here's what you're going to do, and here's what it is going to do for you in your football career. And Bodie has, again, said with us on our site on numerous occasions, that really stood out to me, the fact that they were that steadfast and committed in their decision to recruit me as a DB, and they showcased why they were so convicted in that outlook. And Bodie Sparrow knows, like, if he goes to Oklahoma, he'll have Crew Jones there right alongside him, who's a close personal friend.
Right.
He'll have people who really believe in him and have built bonds with him in Brandon Hall and Brent Venables, this front office with Jim Nagy and so many others. Like, everyone is in his corner in Norman, and they want to build him up. And to be quite honest with you, I think another primary layer to this is that oftentimes Oklahoma is not getting to provide the early playing time argument because of the depth that OU has recruited to on the roster. Quite the opposite here. this is a very important recruitment because Oklahoma needs safeties. I'll get into that more in a second. So OU has been able to sell on top of all this. You will probably be able to play as a freshman in the SEC in this system as a safety. I think that's incredibly enticing to Bodie Sparrow, but BYU has made a really strong argument, and they got to make kind of that final pitch before decision day. It's hard for me to give you an extremely firm answer one way or the other, the way that this goes. That's just me being honest, not me trying to, you know, sit on the fence here.
Sure.
But I think Oklahoma is still feeling pretty good about what could come. BYU could easily go win this recruitment. And honestly, there's an argument to make. They have a majority of the buzz. But this is I said it on Twitter, a true nail biter down the stretch between Oklahoma, BYU, and both of those programs, arguably their top target in 2027.
It's going to be interesting. And, you know, I think there's a natural, I'm sure, reaction to kind of be like, man, Oklahoma, with what they've done defensively and what they've done at safety in the SEC, why are they in a battle with BYU? But you got to keep in mind, I mean, BYU A has been a good program for a while. Kalani Sitake is a great coach, and they're right at the top of the Big 12 every year, and he's in state, right? I mean, he's in state. It's close to home. He knows a lot of guys there. I mean, it's an obvious – you can see why these are the top two and why it would be a tough call for Bodie Sparrow. And so it'll be very interesting. Like we said, tomorrow, CBS Sports College Football, YouTube, 2 o'clock Central, 3 o'clock out there. Well, actually, is that 3 o'clock Mountain? No, 1 o'clock Mountain Time. I'm terrible. Sure. Time zone. I got tripped on time zone there for a second. 1 o'clock Mountain Time for him locally there in Utah. And we'll see which way it goes. Like Colin said, we'll have the coverage as soon as Illustrated. And I'm sure if CK hears anything, you know, tangible over, you know, the rest of today into tonight or tomorrow morning, he'll certainly pass it along to our Sooners Illustrated members, which is why you subscribe and get everything in real time. But we'll have the coverage, and I'm sure we'll discuss next week one way or another with Mr. Sparrow. From one Utah guy to another, you mentioned him a second ago, Yahela Wolf Graham is winding down as well. This is one he does not have a firm commitment time yet, but just in your reporting as soon as Illustrated and what we talked about yesterday, you feel like this is probably nearing its end. How are you feeling here? Another guy that if you've been a regular viewer, listener of the show here that we've been talking about for a while, right? That Miguel Chavez has been chasing, trying to bring into the 27 cycle. How are things sitting with Yahela Wolf Graham right now as we kind of move into the late part of June here?
The best way I can sum it up is it is anybody's guess at this rate. I would argue that between the two Utah guys, the Wolf Graham recruitment is far more uncertain
than
the Sparrow recruitment. I think that Oklahoma has accomplished a lot with Sparrow, and I think just, you know, Brody Lusk and I gathering some feedback, even with BYU surging, I do think that Oklahoma still could easily see this one going – their direction. With Wolf Graham, though, I mean, everything that we've heard behind the scenes is that this one is still completely up in the air. And I would argue that this argument is furthered by the fact that Wolf Graham, what I reported last night, and I would say here to the people wondering, is that, like Josh is talking about, this is an uncertain timeline. And to add on to that uncertainty, we have essentially been told, hey, it could be this week or it could be 2 weeks from now. You know, do with that information what you will. And that, I mean, that leaves a lot of people uncertain about where this is going to go. Wolf Graham has been very open with us that his biggest thing is he does not want to make an emotional decision. And so he is essentially going to take time to wind down and let those emotions subside and then try to identify the most logical path for him. And there are arguments to make with both programs, certainly. What I would probably say is that, you know, going back to the early playing time thing, it's much harder to employ that or you know, use that argument when you're talking about a defensive lineman. I would probably say that BYU could do that maybe a little bit easier than Oklahoma, considering the way that the defensive line looks. But OU has shown its ability to play freshmen early on.
Sure.
Wolf Graham, again, looking at BYU, an in-state option where he also knows several people, Kalani Sitake and him. I mean, BYU has been extremely aggressive in this recruitment for a long time now. I could make the argument that BYU and Oklahoma were kind of the two that made some of the most effort to go out to Wolf Graham and see him in his neck of the woods as much as anybody. And that only furthered those relationships. I could see this going either way. You tell me that this guy's going to BYU, I'm not shocked. You tell me he's going to Oklahoma, I don't think he's shocked. But again, he doesn't know what he's doing yet either, last we've heard. And I think any indication out there is just not necessarily the truth this time, because he is so set on trying to give himself some time to sort everything through emotionally. Could be at any moment, like at time of recording. We don't know. If you're asking me which one Oklahoma should probably be a little bit more optimistic in it, I would probably go Sparrow over Wolf Graham. But again, BYU could win out for Sparrow. BYU could very much win out for Wolf Graham as well. And the last thing I would probably say is, while Sparrow is getting ready to make his decision soon, because of the fluid timeline here for Wolf Graham, I'm not going to be shocked if we kind of have another subtle round of, here's why you should come here. And if those conversations take place, no clue who that favors in the end, but hopefully we find out here in a second.
Very interesting. Oklahoma BYU going toe-to-toe for a couple of Utah kids, Venables v. Sitake, staff versus staff. It's fun. It's fun recruiting battles for both these guys, two guys we've been talking about for a long time, and we'll see how it's a good resolution on Sparrow tomorrow and Wolf Graham, you know, potentially in the near future. Maybe not, though. Maybe it bleeds out a little bit longer, like you were saying. So we'll see. But the latest there for two key targets out of the state of Utah. For Oklahoma, one more on the way out from Utah to back into the central time zone with the state of Texas with Jade Fields, a guy you have mentioned once or twice on the show. I know we talked about him just briefly last week with me, you, and Brody. Three-star, we have him as an athlete. Is Oklahoma safety, right, for him? Is that what we're considering here?
Yeah.
Brandon Hall chasing Mr. Fields, like we said, down the state of Texas. Where are things here for Fields? And is it a Fields – and Sparrow, or if they get Sparrow tomorrow, does this cool? Is it a pit? Like, how does that dynamic work if there's any impact on what Sparrow decides on Fields and kind of how things are standing there with OU and him?
Okay, so this is the final point that I really want to hammer home here on the show. So what I've been, you know, if you've been following me on some podcast appearances or on the site or whatever, you know that I've kind of been one of the people in the space that's really trying to illuminate the fact that Oklahoma has five scholarship safeties going into the season, just five.
Right.
And they will go down to four, having lost their best safety by far following the year to the NFL draft. So
right,
if you count it out, Peyton Bowen, who will leave for the NFL, and that's your top guy, by the way, which is important to consider when we're having this conversation. Michael Boganowski will be the starter opposite of him. Amarion Robinson, Markel Ford, and Nico Jandro. There's your five. Lose Peyton Bowen, you go down to four. That's not typical. And it is why Oklahoma is so heavily invested in the Bodie Sparrow recruitment down the stretch. And it is, to me, a layer why I do believe that Oklahoma will fight tooth and nail to the very end because they love Bodie Sparrow and they know that they need safety bodies going into that room. That is also important to consider with Jaden Fields, and I think it is extremely important to consider with Jaden Fields and Bodie Sparrow. If Oklahoma does win the Bodie Sparrow recruitment on Friday, I still believe that Oklahoma would be involved in Jaden Fields. I think that OU is open to taking three safeties because, again, of what I just presented. And it should be noted as well that Oklahoma does not necessarily have like a true cheetah take in this class as well.
Sure.
So there is incentive to go and get a versatile defensive back body that can play multiple spots as a safety, and that would be someone like Sparrow, and that would certainly be someone like a Jaden Fields. However, if Oklahoma were to lose the Bodie Sparrow recruitment to BYU, which is very much possible, and there's an argument to make, you're going to hear more about that if BYU starts surging or continues to surge the way that it has, well, then Jaden Fields arguably becomes even more of an important recruitment for Oklahoma over the next few weeks. Because, again, they have one scholarship safety committed in this cycle with Jalen Scott. You'd like to get two. Would love to have three if it makes sense. Right. But to have one, and if you were to miss out on Sparrow, then we need to have even more conversations about Jaden Fields. And it's a big reason why I've been reporting so steadily on this recruitment. So if Sparrow were to go to BYU, here's what I want to hammer home with Jaden Fields. He just took his TCU official visit. So he's taking OVs with SMU, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, and TCU. I am hearing that this is still, out of those four programs, favoring two, that being Oklahoma and SMU. I think SMU for the longest time has had the momentum and has been considered the favorite. But I also do think that there is a big reason why Jaden Fields told us at Sooners Illustrated, which our subscribers knew, he's not necessarily looking to make a decision until July. And now I'm even hearing that could be extended into roughly the middle portion of the month. I think that there is a good reason for that. I think that Jaden Fields understands that he has the leverage, and I think that a lot more can be revealed about his recruitment depending upon a decision that's being made this Friday. So while I still think that SMU is going to be seen as the favorite in the public sphere, and I would certainly understand that, I cannot rule out Oklahoma and Jaden Fields becoming a very real thing, especially if things go a certain direction with one of OU's top safety targets. But I mean, Oklahoma told Jaden Fields and his family in person he is one of the two safeties they're looking to bring in to make an impact in this program and to potentially play early. And Fields has been receptive to that message. He's seen his younger brother, Carson Fields, by the way, go to TCU, go to SMU, and get offers from them. And he's built up those relationships for a long time. And yet he's still hearing Oklahoma out. I think this is one that we're going to have to continue to monitor, especially considering what could take place over the next couple of days.
Interesting stuff, obviously, with some key names here. And it's so funny to think that not that long ago we were kind of wondering – you know, or at least I was wondering aloud on the show, like, you know, would 2027 start to wind down? And like, there's been a lot of movement. Oklahoma's still been very active, sending out new offers and trying to add guys to a class that, you know, has been pretty big for a while. But, you know, going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. Still a top five class for us right now at 24/7 Sports. Certainly could strengthen that with a Sparrow commitment tomorrow. We'll see how that shakes out. And I'll say these other guys that you just touched on, Wolf Graham and Fields, among others. So keep up with us over at Sooners Illustrated. Colin and Brody have both been just absolutely killing it this summer, and more to come as we shift into the month of July here, coming up very, very soon. I think that's it for now. Good stuff. Fun to talk some baseball with you, Colin. First time we've done that in a long time. That was nice, and caught up on a few key targets. We'll be back next week, probably Monday with Tom and I. We'll keep an eye on that. He's on vacation right now, but he gets back, I think, Sunday, maybe Monday, maybe not till Tuesday. We'll let you know. Obviously, one way or another, we'll start to shift into kind of, like we said, full-blown off-season mode, starting to really start to turn the page to football season and really start to look ahead to this team coming up this year in 2026. And obviously, Colin, I'll catch up next week, maybe with Brody as well. We'll see how things shake out, obviously. But keep an eye out for that coming up next week as well. That's it for Colin Kennedy. I'm Josh Callaway. We'll see you guys next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.